are back after a couple of weeks of R&R. You know, I remember when that used to mean rock and roll. Anyway, there's a lot to talk about. The hockey world is reeling. 9/11 memories unappealing. The CNE evokes a positive feeling, though someone there is stealing. And that's not all we're dealing. With Don Landry, I'm Bill Hayes, and this is The Gist of It.
Politics, sports, entertainment, pop culture. It's all fair game here. Somewhere in the city of Toronto, two brains are about to collide. What will remain is the gist of it. Here now are Don Landry and Bill Hayes.
Feels good to be back after a little hiatus, doesn't it?
Aye, it does, Donald.
This is a guy who just got back from Scotland, folks, on an epic, what's the proper word to use, golf trip.
Trip of my life.
Bill Hayes, back from Scotland, played how many rounds in how many days?
10 rounds in 8 days.
10 rounds in 8 days. Okay, well, that's not as bad. I've heard of some guys going out and playing, like, in 8 days, they would have played 16 rounds.
Actually,
or 17 or 18.
Might have been 7 days, actually.
They would have had the odd three-round day in there. I can barely get through 18 holes. I start to feel, I think 12 is perfect. Somebody needs it. I always said, if I designed a golf course, it would be, how would I do it again? I can't even remember. It would be six out and six in and then, you know, three and three or whatever you want to do.
Well,
you'd have
Jack
the choice.
Nicklaus has done that.
Oh, has he?
He believes the same thing. It's too
stole
much
it from me, probably.
Yeah, I think so. He called.
I did one interview with him about, about 3 or 4 years ago, and I may have mentioned it to the bear.
That's where he picked it up.
Yeah. So do tell.
Well, it was marvelous. You know, Scotland is a wonderful place. Have you been?
Never been. I'm going to go one of these days.
Not just for the golf. The people are very nice. The country is beautiful. We were up in a very northern part of Scotland for a couple of days. Beautiful. I played on a golf course that had sheep grazing on it.
I've heard that, you know, that it's a cow pasture. They're all cow pastures. Well, no, they're sheep pastures, I guess. And they actually have them crossing along.
There's a local rule that if your stance would put you in some sheep dung.
Careful. Oh, okay. Stance, sheep. I was worried.
You get a free lift.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Of the ball or the sheep?
Well, you,
or the dung, yeah.
Well, it's clear over here.
Feel free to lift the dung to your heart's
wild. You know, the funny thing is, one of the caddies that was in our group that day lived on the course, and he was telling us that, you know, he's got two dogs. In the afternoon, he comes out and he plays 4 or 5 holes with the dogs. And, you know, it's like, what a life. It's a fabulous place. The whole trip was amazing.
So you're at St. Andrews, Carnoustie.
Yep.
Where else?
Turnberry, Royal Dornoch. I played, according to, I think, one of the latest lists of the top 100 courses in the world, I played 7 of them.
Pretty good.
Oh, yeah. It was an amazing trip. Castle Stewart.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. What a place that is.
We talked before you went about, you know, the night terrors you were having about, you know, the first tee at St. Andrews. And, of course, the urban legend that one guy whiffed twice and the starter kicked him off and said, you ain't playing St. Andrews today. How'd that go?
I pulled my drive like a grade 9 with acne. That's how bad a pull it was. It was, wow. It was not good at all. When you see.
Oh, boy.
I mean, that first hole, you have a lot of room on the left, and I took full advantage and still went over.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable. Yeah. But then I hit, the guy came over to me, and I could see him coming on. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. And he said, you didn't come all this way to hit that one. Hit another.
Oh.
And then I hit the second one right down the middle.
So for a moment, feeling that, oh, no, this is going to happen to me.
Yeah.
The thing is going to happen to me. And so instead, he just relaxed you.
And he was fine. Yeah, it was pretty good. And I'll tell you, I played very well after that. The front nine there, I was one over par the rest of the night.
Let me ask you something as we finish off talking about Scotland and your golf trip. The mustache is coming in nicely. Bill, it's new. Is that because of the Sean Connery effect there? Or did you just want something that looks as ridiculous as Dustin McGowan's sideburns to match him?
Ooh.
All right, that's a little harsh. Dustin McGowan, great story.
Yes.
Glad he's back. Wonderful. Hope he can be all that he was before. If not more, sometimes that happens. Chris Carpenter, see him.
Yep.
But those sideburns, I just thought, hey, Moe's, Dwight Schrute's brother from The Office, is pitching for the Blue Jays now. He's finished harvesting beets for the season.
Yeah.
And now he's out on the mound. That's just bad.
It's a look, though, isn't it? I mean, seriously, when you think about it, and I don't think I would do this, but I applaud those who do, and he's clearly one of them. If you're in the public eye and you want to be somehow unique, those chops certainly do the trick.
And I have news for you. So does your mustache.
Kablooey! It's time for Bombs Away.
Bill, I've been watching a lot of the U.S. Open. It seems to be the tennis tournament that most appeals to me. I'm not sure why, and I'm done trying to figure it out, but I watch hour after hour after hour. I've seen a lot of the women. You know, that Wozniacki's pretty good. Wozniacki's pretty good. There's a lot of grunting in women's tennis.
A lot.
Svetlana Kuznetsova, I think. I should you know, correctly identify grunt and woman. I think it's Svetlana Kuznetsova, who sounds like she's yelling Opa every time. It's quite comical. So yeah, a lot of grunting in women's tennis. It seems to bother a lot of people to the point that the WTA has been mulling out loud doing something about it. I don't know. Curb your enthusiasm, ladies. If you're too loud, then, you know, I don't know, you could penalize some way. Doesn't bother me a bit, I have to say. Not a thing about the grunting bothers me. And a lot of things do bother me. I get agitated pretty easily.
I've noticed that.
But yeah, women grunting in tennis, it doesn't bother to me. It was kind of like the Vuvuzelas at the World Cup. I got used to them. And not that I watched a lot of soccer, but when I did, the Vuvuzelas didn't drive me to distraction. Here's what bothers me in tennis. Rafael Nadal constantly picking at his bum. All right? Tennis needs to do something about that. After almost every single point for years, he reaches back there and digs his gitch out. Awesome tennis player, terrific talent, likable fella. A new underwear sponsor, por favor, because in tennis, the grunting isn't as big a turnoff as the bunching of Rafael Nadal's underwear.
All I'll say is I'm grateful that it's his own that he's fixing. That's all I can say. You know, we've been off for a couple of weeks. A lot of stuff has happened in that time. School's back, for example. And with school, so is the traffic back in the city. I don't want to get back into that whole transit debate. We've talked about that before. And actually, it's been going on in the city for umpteen years. But we have a provincial election coming up, and this should be a major issue in it. Not just for those in the city, but also those who live in the 905. Now, I understand. I can see these spots. The tax man. I get all of that. But you know what? There's a lot more to life than paying taxes. And part of that is living in a city like this. It's got to get fixed. I don't care what happens, but this whole inertia that's been going on for so long has to stop.
It's a very different portion of the podcast now. We've had some lighthearted stuff to start, but obviously some very sobering, somber events have happened over the last week or so. In particular, yesterday, the latest, the hockey world being rocked once again with the perishing of an entire hockey team, Lokomotiv from the KHL. And, you know, you get numbed by this kind of thing, but you start to sift through it a little bit and your brain starts picking out different angles. And outside of just being, or having that sinking feeling, that terrible thing that there were so many familiar faces and names that were lost, I started to think, I'm surprised this doesn't happen more often. The millions and millions of air miles being flown by professional teams, not just in North America, not just in Russia, but the world over, constantly, day in and day out, that this doesn't happen more often is it a testament to the safety of air travel? Is it something other than that? I don't know. Should my mind even go there? I'm glad, obviously, it doesn't happen more often. I just would think that it would happen more often.
It's funny. I do think that it is a testament to air safety because, you know, you keep hearing these numbers. I know an awful lot of people are afraid of flying. And I must admit that I get a little antsy, and not an awful lot, but it's because I'm not in control. And I think a lot of people feel that way. If they were flying the plane, they'd feel better. Mind you, I know I can't fly a plane, but the point is, it is safe, generally speaking, to fly, safer than almost any other form of transportation. There are things that I think can add to the probability of something happening, and not the least of which is the age of the plane. And I think one of the things we've been looking at in the last little while, especially here in North America, although plane safety is still pretty high. It's an expensive business to be in.
Yeah.
And maintenance is the most important part of it as far as I'm concerned. But you'll see situations where, for marketing reasons or whatever, companies will say, well, we're always on time. And I think that's something that would concern me with weather situations and so on and so forth. I know that if you're a hockey team, a college football team, whatever it might be, and you're flying, you're on a pretty tight schedule. And I'm wondering whether sometimes some of these guys take off when they shouldn't.
Right.
It's a concern. It hasn't happened an awful lot. In this particular instance, that's not what happened.
No.
I saw some footage, and it was a bright day. It was fine.
But it appears right. There was just a major mechanical malfunction.
And it happened.
It may be pilot error, too. I shouldn't even really jump to conclusions. We'll find out when we find out. But you're right. It seemed to be a clear day with real weather problems.
And it does appear as if there's one thing you do take away, is that for the most part, flying really is safe. These reminders, tend to scare us a little bit more. But the end, you think of, like you said, all those millions of miles that get flown without incident.
You know what it is? It's that there are more bicycle accidents. There are more car accidents. It's just that with a bicycle, there's a very good chance the accident might only injure you to varying degrees. Mm-hmm. A little more serious with automobiles, of course, but there's a good chance you were injured in a car accident. An airline accident is calamitous.
Very much.
Almost
so.
Completely, almost 100% of
That's
the time.
Right.
Very rarely does anybody walk away or even get injured greatly and heal up after that. It's not unheard of, but I think that's what it is. It's the calamitous nature of the accident that really freaks people out about air travel, because of all of those millions and millions of hours being flown safely. You do think about it. It's in your head. This just rarely happens. It's just that if it does happen, you have very little chance of extending your life beyond that event.
You're extremely vulnerable. Yeah. I mean, that's exactly the case. And again, it comes back to, I think, that whole issue of not being in control. At least for me, that's what it is. It may not be for everybody else. One of the things on the flight back from Scotland, we had a little bit of turbulence. We were warned several times it was going to be pretty bad, and it wasn't. But that's another thing that adds to that anxiety. If you've been on a flight that had any amount of turbulence, you remember it. And these guys fly a lot, the athletes. I'm sure that's something that's almost common. It has to add to it. You hear an awful lot about players who, for whatever reason, they want to be in some place where they don't have to fly as much as.
Right.
I've heard over the years many players who were afraid of flying didn't want to do it. But I don't think that it's necessarily the case that it would impact them making a living. I do think there were a couple of players who maybe did quit because of the flying. I want to say McGilney was one of them, but I could be wrong.
Well, he had a real problem with flying for a while. And I think that's part of the reason he came east in the first place. Mm-hmm. And then, if I remember correctly, he did wrestle that fear to the ground for the most part, was a little better with it, but still was traveling less, obviously, with the New Jersey Devils, the Buffalo Sabres, and the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah, and it can become an issue, and there's no question. But for the most part, like I said, I really think that air travel's pretty safe. It's that vulnerability you feel and the fear and anxiety, especially when an event goes on. When that happens, I can't imagine. I do. The first thing I think of is, what were these guys thinking as the plane's going?
I know.
It's a terrible thing to think.
It is.
But
I think everyone goes to that spot too. And I don't know. Can we even imagine that feeling? The horror of that. That's the other thing. A car accident might come out of the blue and take you almost immediately. If you're going to crash in an airplane, it's possible you could do it for many seconds, if not beyond a minute.
And know
that your fate is likely sealed and this is going to be it. It's a terrible thing, an awful thing, and pro hockey's terrible summer just got so much sadder.
It's Phil Hayes and Don Landry, and you're getting the gist of it.
So where does the KHL go from here, Bill, I think is a question that they've brought up themselves. In fact, the president of the Continental Hockey League, Alexander Medvedev, has indicated that they would like to get back to playing the season as soon as possible with another locomotive team. And the last reports that we've seen, he's talked to 18 team representatives out of the 24 who are on board with this. And there is a loose plan in place to have up to three players from each team transferred over to locomotive to bring up some of the younger players from their minor system and have a full season with locomotive new players taking part from the get-go. It's an unofficial decision right now, but it seems like the way they are leaning right now. I'm not terribly comfortable with this, and I realize there are... I just don't think it's an appropriate measure at this time. I think a certain grace period needs to be granted for grieving, and it's a difficult decision to make, and I understand that it would be done with the best of intentions and probably done with the feeling in their hearts of hearts that they want to pay tribute to these fallen players the best way they know how, and that is by having their team continue on for them in their name. So I do understand that part of it, but I think my personal preference would be to play a season without that team and then maybe start up again next year.
I have two things on that. The first is, I believe that when you're grieving, it's an all-encompassing thing, and it can be overwhelming if you don't have other things to do. You got to be busy because it takes your mind off of what you're grieving about, and I think sometimes you have to have that, especially something as massive as this, because this is huge. I can't imagine being associated, being a fan of this team or anything along those lines, because the loss is overwhelming. That's the only word you can use for it. The other thing about it, though, is...
Let me ask you, I don't want to... We'll get to your other point, too, but maybe personalize it a bit more. Maybe we can... If it's your favorite team that this happens to, mm-hmm. imagine that. If you can access those feelings as best as you could, how you might feel about your team moving ahead a couple of weeks later with all new players in those uniforms. Would that be a good feeling for you, or would that piss you off?
I don't think it would piss me off. I think I do think it would be difficult, because I think one of the things about being a fan is you have an emotional investment, not just in the team, the sweater, the logo, or anything along those lines, but in the players as well. And I think it would be very difficult to get past that. But I also believe that as part of the process, it's something you have to do. So I think in time, I might at first think this looks a little out of place, but there's also, I think, the possibility of a coming together behind this idea. And I think that's also something that might help. Remember, keep in mind that in this instance, it's not a small group of people that's grieving. It's an entire city, and maybe even an entire country, and certainly the hockey world. I mean, you know, when you look at it from an even bigger macro picture, I think it's just something that works. The other point I was going to bring up was, I think you make a lot of sense that seeing new people, different people, wearing those sweaters is going to be difficult. But I also believe it's going to have to happen eventually. And
oh, I'm fine with that, Bill. I mean, go ahead and do
that.
It eventually.
I
just don't think you need to do it immediately.
I don't see a problem with doing it immediately, because I do think what you want to do is you want to get past the event. And you're never going to really get past the event, because this is massive. I mean,
I don't think that's job one, getting past the event. I think number one is honoring the memories. But did you see the movie We Are Marshall? Did you read the book? I mean, mm-hmm. we know, based on a terrible true story very similar to this, the Marshall Thundering Herd almost completely wiped out in a plane crash.
Right.
In 1970.
I want to say 70. I think it was 70.
And of course their season was done. It was during the season that it happened, and they did not play, and there were many people who didn't want them to play at all the next year, and they didn't know how long it would go on. But there were enough people involved, some of the players, at least according to the movie, who wanted to step ahead because they didn't think that they were doing anything except honoring the memory of their fallen comrades and representing Marshall as best they could and representing their work as best they could by playing, even if they were going to get beaten badly by all of their opponents. So I think there's some resonance in that kind of a feeling here too. But I would just point out that that happened about a year later and there was still some pushback. And I think there will be some pushback on this.
Well, there's no question. I there's an awful lot of people who share your point of view on this. I agree. It does appear to be awfully quick. I mean, there's, you know, a grieving period should be longer than a week. I'll give you that. But I do think that you have to get back on the horse. It may be the wrong way to put it, but and I think the sooner the better. Not because you're going to forget this. I firmly believe that this is an event that won't be forgotten ever. And so that's not where this is going to take it. It's,
boy,
it's an idea of getting past it as quickly as possible.
I know, but that's a tough thing. I will be honest with you. I always am. The last place I would want to be is in that arena watching other players this close to this tragedy. As a fan, I'm personalizing it, make it my favorite team. I couldn't go anywhere near the stadium. I couldn't do it. I would understand because I think I've shown that I understand there's another side to this whole thing.
Yep.
But there is no way I could go back into that stadium and enjoy a hockey game based on the events that are so near. I just couldn't do it.
There's no question that the timing is the issue. And I understand your point of view on this as well. If they did decide to suspend Lokomotiv for 1 year, I'd be okay with that. But I don't see that it's necessarily a problem to get back right away. I just think, in my view, I think that helps the process. But I'm certainly willing to agree that, you know, I'm not the only one, that there are other ways to look at it.
Probably 1,000 different ways to grieve, Bill. And and within the two scenarios that we have illustrated here, there are probably thousands of ways to grieve in each of those scenarios. So, again, I don't believe that there is a right answer and a wrong answer, just a preference.
Well, Don, the plane crash in Russia was by no means the only tragic event to happen in the hockey world in the last little while. Wade Bielak and his death just a week ago also sent repercussions throughout the hockey world. And there were several different narratives that came out of this. When you put it together with the death of Derek Bugard and Rick Rippon over the summer, and Wade Bielak, the three of them all enforcer types, an awful lot of people went directly to the fighting issue and what can be done about that. And there is also the fact that Wade Bielak had suffered from depression, an issue that, I don't know, maybe needs to be looked at a little bit closer, because it's one of those things, especially in the macho hockey world, where no matter what your vulnerabilities are, you can't show them.
Right.
Maybe this will open some doors in that regard. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it inappropriately or wrongly, I think a lot of people immediately leap to the conclusion that Wade Bielak's suicide is indirectly linked to him being an enforcer, being a fighter, when we don't have any proof of that yet.
Well, it's because of the other two, though. It became a, I think, anyway.
Well, all right. Amy Winehouse is gone. River Phoenix is gone many years ago. You can talk about many actors or musicians who leave the planet. Maybe I need to find, you know, examples that are closer together, but it doesn't necessarily mean they're gone for the same reasons, right? Rippon committed suicide. Bugard, a mix of at least prescription medication and alcohol.
Yep.
More of an accident than anything. We don't know exactly what drove Wade Bielak to kill himself. And it may have something to do with head trauma. They all might. I'm just saying they might not. We don't know. Ty Domi had this right. I read an article by Mike Zeisberger.
Yeah,
I saw
it too.
Ty Domi's right about a lot of this. And I don't think it's because he's trying to protect the noble name of the enforcer. But after all, the numbers show that over 3,000 people committed suicide in Canada alone last year. The vast majority of them, Bill, were not NHL enforcers or retired NHL enforcers. Mm-hmm. The vast majority of them. Depression is an extremely complicated state of mind, disease, if you will,
sickness. Mental illness, yeah.
And it's not nearly as well understood as it possibly could be. And it's not so simple to say three enforcers are dead, linked to some depression, probably head trauma. The NHL's fighting policies are bad. You can't do that. It's just nonsense. It's interesting logic to make those dots connect without further proof that they actually do.
That, though, is a product of further reflection. And in our society, that's not something we do an awful lot of. We live in a Twitter world.
Unfortunately,
when something happens, here's my opinion. Yeah. And that's what happened, I think, in this particular instance. Right. We immediately went to the fact that they're similar players. It's got to be something wrong with fighting. You have people who are anti-fighting advocates in hockey, and they took this as the latest example of why hockey should ban fighting. And, you know, I understand that. On the other hand, I think you're absolutely right. You got to look deeper, and that was not what this was about.
It's fine if you want to forward that argument. You know, and we don't want to get too complicated about this whole thing, but look, I'm not anti-fighting or pro-fighting. But I'll be honest, I couldn't care less if I ever saw another hockey fight. And I've said that many, many times. Now, when one happens, I don't, you know, sometimes I do flick the channel just because many hockey fights aren't all that compelling. But if you want to put that forward, go ahead, continue to do it, but don't link it particularly so quickly to, you know, a tragic death that, after all, didn't happen on the ice, didn't happen because of a punch to the head directly. Don't link it, and don't link it immediately. I mean, you're smarter than that, people who are doing that. You must know that you have to get most of the facts, if not all of them, you can draw conclusions.
Reflections. And people don't do that. They don't go into depth. Frankly, it's one of the problems we have in this Twitter world we live in. You know, it's very easy to have an opinion. We all do, to some extent. It's a lot more difficult to have an informed opinion. Right. And in this particular case, I do believe that the real issue here is what Domi was getting at. There are vulnerabilities. Depression's only one of them. There's a lot of others. And you have to have an environment where, if you're a hockey player, you can go and get some help for some of this. One of the things I've always believed, players are human beings. Now, I know we all know that to be true, but you keep hearing people saying, well, he's a pro. He's a pro doesn't necessarily get past the fact that he's also got problems. And if you have to deal with those problems, you have to have an outlet to do so. It's not, I don't think, a problem with the NHLPA, and I know they took a lot of heat for this, and I don't think it's a problem with the NHL, because I think both of those corporations or groups are certainly willing and hoping to help whenever this is the case. The problem is the culture of the game. The problem is you cannot show a weakness. In fact, in life, you have to show weaknesses to defeat them.
But this is not just an NHL problem.
It's a societal problem.
Right.
Absolutely.
The larger problem within society is that it's slowly but surely changing, I think. At least, and again, you know, it's an anecdotal kind of feel that I have about this. But just generally speaking, I think slowly but surely people are starting to understand that depression isn't, oh, come on, buck up. Yeah. You just need to buck up. Why don't you just look on the bright side? It's much more complicated. It's much more pernicious than that. And, you know, little strides, I think, are being made in that area towards an understanding as to what exactly is afflicting people when they're depressed.
I don't want to say that it's a part of God's plan, because I'm not even sure if I believe that. But if there is a plan, if there is something that can be taken from what we've seen this summer, it's that those kinds of things can be brought out into the public eye and looked at in a fair way, as opposed to the way that I think, like you just said, where people kind of look at who might be suffering from depression or whatever else it might be as a negative, as a, like you say, buck up. Hey, sometimes people can't, and yet they need help.
And there are many different types of help to be gotten. medically. I mean, pharmaceutically, but there's also cognitive therapy, which can be very effective to people who are afflicted with depression at different times. And, you know, the research goes on, and the steps will continue to be made, hopefully, in harnessing what is terribly wrong with people who suffer depression over and over again, and hopefully finding, if not a cure, it's, you know, better management techniques as time goes on.
Just whatever it is, don't hide it.
This is The Gist of It.
Don, as we record this, we're 3 days away from the 10th anniversary of 9/11. And over the last little while, I've been watching, I'm sure you have too, and most of the free world, I'm sure, have been watching retrospectives, different stories, things that came out, things that couldn't be said before. And you know, I found, I like watching stuff like this. I like going back and revisiting points in time. They put something on about the Vietnam War, and I remember I was a kid at the time, but I like looking back at that kind of stuff. I want to see how history was. I don't feel that way about 9/11 at all. I want it to go away. I don't want to commemorate it. I think it was one of those moments that I know I'll never forget. And maybe it's that I don't want the wounds to be reopened, although I'm not sure how much validity there is to that. I don't want to relive that. And I don't want to hear about these great stories of heroes or anything anymore. I think they're wonderful. I just don't want to hear it. I want to close the door, put it in the closet, and never look at it again.
I don't know what to say about 9/11 now. I didn't know what to say about it then. I clearly remember exactly what I was doing and where I was. Everybody does. And so, you know, I remember those thoughts, I think every year at this time, but this being, you know, the 10th anniversary, it seems it's a milestone of sorts. And do you sense that leading up to it, you know, at year 6, 7, 8, people were looking forward, not with glee, but I mean, looking towards the 10th anniversary as though this might be some kind of a turning point in a healing process? Do you get any kind of sense like that?
No, I don't. I don't, you know, it's funny because I don't get the sense that anybody really knows how to deal with it.
Right.
I think it's one of those things that we, there are moments, very few like that one, that are so all-encompassing. You remember, the world stopped for 10 days. I mean, really, you know, people didn't fly. There was a whole bunch of stuff going on. And while I'm appreciative of all of that stuff having had to be done at the time, and I'm certainly appreciative of the work that was done by the NYPD and the New York Fire Department, and they truly were heroic. I don't want to revisit it. I don't want it to become a...
It's hard. It's difficult. It's emotional. I can't even get close to a place where I can, you know, attach myself to the emotions people in New York City feel, particularly people who lost somebody. But it affected everybody here. Yesterday I was driving along the Gardiner, and you know, and since it's again top of mind, we're nearing the anniversary, I looked at the Toronto skyline, and once in a while, I know I did immediately after it happened, looked at the CN Tower, looked at the Bank of Montreal building, and just thought, imagine if that had happened here, what that might be like. And I don't know really what to say. I wish I could crystallize my thoughts about 9/11 10 years out in a nice compact 2 or 3 sentences. It's almost impossible to do. I know I get frustrated when I hear people say, hey, what's with the airport security now? Come on, we're spending all this money, we're doing all these things. You know, in a sense, the terrorists have won because they've changed our lifestyle. No, the terrorists haven't won because I can't take more than 3 ounces of shampoo in my carry-on, or I have to take my shoes off, and it might take me a little bit longer to get through security at the airport. They haven't won because of that. The terrorists would have won. They would be continuing to win if we didn't enact measures like that, and they were allowed to purposefully launch planes into buildings on a continuing basis, and that hasn't happened. So there, I don't feel a loss there. I don't feel the frustration people do about airport security and border security. I'm thankful for it. I feel a little safer. I don't mind spending another 5 or 10 minutes or even a half an hour at an airport if they are doing the proper job to ensure that I'm going to have a safe trip. Just more reasonable than the average person?
That's a great example, though, of how we react to things, because that's something that we can directly say affects us. You go to the airport, it takes longer to get through security, and we don't like it. The actual, to me, the real problem since 9/11 has been the war in Iraq, the war in Afghanistan, how much it's cost, and what it's done to our economy. That's real. But the thing is, you can't, in some way, quantify it so that you can really take it all in. All you know is it's massive, you know, because there wouldn't have been a war in Iraq, and there wouldn't, I don't think, have been a war in Afghanistan.
Right. Well, no, I think you're wrong about that. I think there definitely would have been a war in Iraq.
No.
Oh, there would have been some other, there would have been, well, they weren't going into Iraq, remember, Bill, because there was any connection to, right.
No, so but that's what gave them, that's what gave them, though, the green light to go in, because they, oh, weapons of mass destruction. We, because what happened, I, in my opinion.
You don't think people would have bought Colin Powell and his little thimble of anthrax or whatever it was?
It was nonsense. The whole thing was nonsense. The only reason they went there, the whole time, Afghanistan was the place where the problem was. They knew that.
Oh, yeah, I know.
They knew that.
Of course.
And they went in there right away.
Right.
But Iraq was like, we want to get this guy.
I know. That's what I mean. They would. Yeah. There would have been some reason. They would have. Well,
it would have been much more
conspiracy
difficult.
Conspiracy theorist, Bill. Did the U.S. government sanction terrorist attacks on New York City and Washington in order to?
I can tell you this. You
push ahead their agenda against Saddam Hussein.
I don't know about that, but I'm pretty sure they're responsible for the flood I had in my basement this past weekend.
That's as good a reason as any to invade a country. At least when George W. Bush was president.
The old let's go to the XO, baby, let's go. When was the last time they used that?
They actually used it this year. Not in its entirety. There was a little sampling of it.
Was it? Okay. Because that's been around forever, as has the X, actually. Yeah. And we've talked about this before. I think it's not the same as it used to be, but still pretty good. You went? What do you think?
I loved it. The old girl can still thrill you. I don't know how old she is. I haven't been there in a few years, but I really enjoyed it. You know, we partook. We immersed in the carnival atmosphere and experience. We ate nothing but crap. I mean,
oh, that's all it
I
is.
I had a candy apple. My wife had a caramel apple. That wasn't to start the day, but we went into the food building and, you know, had, you know, pierogies stuffed with cheese. What else did we have? I did not have the Krispy Kreme burger. I looked at it.
Well, we did too.
Ooh. I just knew I couldn't eat the whole thing. If I could have shared it, somebody said to me, should have, you know, just yell out at the food court. Anybody want to go in on a consortium? It'll be one bite each, just to try it, to say you did. But we had deep fried Joe Louis. We did all of that. Here's my theory about deep frying, by the way. If something is good for you, mm-hmm. like vegetables, mm-hmm. it's good to batter and deep fry them. That improves it. If something's bad for you, a Snickers bar, a Joe Louis, battering and deep frying it makes it worse. I did not.
Thank you. That's pretty deep.
I think that's the truth, though.
Yeah, no, I if you were looking for an argument on that, I'm sorry you've come to the wrong place. I saw the deep fried Coke.
Yeah, there's just like
what?
It's a thick syrupy kind of thing. Deep fried sticks of butter, which really is just, you know, melted butter inside some batter and you put some icing sugar on it and things like that.
I looked at all of that stuff. Yeah. The burger, especially the Krispy Kreme burger, I tell you,
yeah.
As much as the idea on paper makes you yak, in person, it
absolutely would.
Oh, it was the weirdest thing to see. You know how you go to a burger joint and you see a grill and there's a bunch of different burgers on it and you kind of go like, oh, that looks pretty neat. I didn't get that sense at
all.
Yeah,
no.
I couldn't imagine. Like, what kind of a condiment would you put on that? Who eats a Krispy Kreme with ketchup? Nobody.
Well, apparently the flavors, diametrically opposed as they may be, play off each other well. And actually, there's a fair bit of sugar in ketchup, Bill. So there, you've been schooled.
Oh, you got me there.
Did you stop by to see the guy being shot from the cannon?
I did not.
We did that. Got to see the guy being shot from the cannon. And it was great. I mean, it was a big build-up. Guy's talking. His assistant is talking. It's over in about, you know, 3 seconds.
Yeah.
And you walk away going, great. Saw some buskers there. Played some of the games. Won a few stuffed animals.
See, that's the thing
did
I
the
do.
Tilt-a-whirl.
Yeah.
So,
no, Tells the world I can ride. Do.
Great ride.
I can't do the Polar Express. I love rides, but that terrifies me. Do you want to go faster? No, I want it to stop.
Yeah.
It terrifies me.
I like that.
But I guess that's the feeling you get from rides. I mean, I never get terrified on a roller coaster. I love that feeling.
Right.
Not so on the Polar Express.
Had a great day at the X. Got a little bit lucky.
How's that?
Because the weather was a little iffy, and the crowd was down. It got more crowded as the day went on, and the weather cleared up and into the evening, and you know we kind of got out of there by about 9 o'clock. But it's a terrific experience once again. I loved it. And
do you get the sense, though, that we're coming near the end of the X?
No, I don't.
No?
No, not at all. I think it's like, in many ways, the Canadian Football League, you know, which hit death's door how many times, particularly in the 90s. There's always somebody who loves it so much that they'll step up to do something about it. I don't think the X is ever going away.
The only reason I would suggest that the X, it's changed a lot, as we mentioned, but it could go away only because that land is worth a fortune. And somewhere, somebody's going to say, you know, we've got a deficit here. Why don't we blank?
Oh, I don't think there's anybody at the municipal level in place right now that would think that way.
Really? Really? Okay.
The Fords are pro Carnival, I think. They want to build a giant Ferris wheel down in the Portlands? Well, all right. Yeah, just build one there at the X instead.
Well,
my wife and I are going to go on the ghost walk. A lot of ghosts hanging around the CNE.
Yeah.
Well, every Friday night I think they're having it. By way of a plug for them, they had a display, Ghosts of the CNE, and I got hooked by some of the stories, so we want to do this. But also, the Bra Project, did you see that?
I did not. And that Perry
Sound,
I regret.
They're trying to raise money for a new mammography machine. I think that's what they're called.
Yep.
And so they were inviting people to design bras. There's a Bobby Orr bra. If you're listening to this podcast on donlandry.com, go to the blog section, and there's a picture of the Bobby Orr bra. If you're on iTunes, go to donlandry.com. What are you doing on iTunes, for crying out loud? And it's called the Booby Orr bra. But it's, you know, to raise money for a mammography machine.
Booby Orr what?
They had all these different bra. It's a bra. It's got
booby
like
or what?
Booby or bra. What are you not getting about this?
Booby or bust. Booby or booby or what?
Or bust.
Yeah.
I thought they could call it the Braby or as well. But at any rate, so there are all these different bras. Great things like that. Buskers all over the place. The X is not running out of steam in my mind. It's just getting better. Who doesn't want to go and watch the Tiny Tom donuts get popped out?
Hang on a second. The one thing I will say about the X is I pretty much walk down the midway with my hands in the air. That's what I do when I'm getting robbed.
Got to get out of here for another week. But before we go, NFL season about to start. Careful little Super Bowl prediction, Bill?
Sure. I think we're going to see a repeat. I'm a Packer fan, and I don't see any team that's going to be able to beat them.
A complete repeat? Steelers? Mm-hmm. Steelers going to make it all the way through?
I'm not sure about that, but the Pack will.
I kind of agree that. Look, we keep hearing about the super team, Philadelphia Eagles. The super team! They always find a way to not win a Super Bowl, basically. I like the Packers again. The only reason I might not pick them is because it's so damn hard to repeat, but they look as good as gold to me. Or is that as good as green and gold, I suppose? Bill, you're a Packer fan. Before we leave, one more sporting note. Did you notice Prime Minister Harper was at the Blue Jays game in New York last Sunday? He was sitting there in the she-she seats. I understand that a beer vendor came by and said, "Would you like a beer?" He put up his hand and said, "I'm not taking any questions." And that is the gist of it.
The Gist of It is available every Wednesday afternoon through iTunes or at donlandry.com.